All right, thank you. The court will now hear oral argument in U.S. v. Goodman.
Chief Judge and judges of the court, may it please the court. I am Major Richard Guarini, and Colonel Patricia Hamm and I represent the appellant, Specialist Goodman. As the trial judge noted below, and the government notes here on appeal, Specialist Goodman raised matters inconsistent with his plea to guilty to the specification of Charge 1. Specifically, he raised an affirmative defense of mistake of fact to violating AR-600-20, specifically the Army's sexual
harassment. Just to be clear, the test is not just whether he raised matters inconsistent, but in your view, they were unresolved.
Yes, Your Honor.
I just want, is that how you finished your
sentence? Yes, Your Honor. That okay. is exactly how I finish, in fact.
So you're really here arguing that not just that he raised them, but they were left on the table.
Yes, Your Honor. They're actually not resolved for three reasons. The first is that he did not get any new facts or negate or explain the defense in the further inquiry. Second, that the responses that the government argues are responsive to whether this defense applied or not are mere mechanical responses to questions. And third, the military judge does not go through the affirmative defense issue with Specialist Goodman, or specifically mistake of fact, to ensure that he understood what he was giving up when he pled guilty, and that thus he abused his discretion when he accepted the guilty plea before resolving those facts.
Now, so can I ask you two threshold questions about Article 92 and specifically the alleged violation in this case?
Yes, Your Honor.
In your view, did the appellant, in order to be guilty of the charged offense, have to know that his advances were unwelcome?
Yes, Your Honor. In this view, he does.
And you're basing that on what?
Let me take that back. No, he doesn't. However,
the defense of
mistake of fact, he does. So there's two separate issues. The substantive crime, which objectively he could be convicted of, and I'm not arguing here. What I'm arguing here is that he raised an affirmative defense of mistake of fact, which that, yes, he would have to have knowledge, or he didn't have knowledge they were offensive, which raised the affirmative defense.
Well, but my first question, which I would just like to get a clear yes or no answer to, in order to be guilty of the Article 92 offense, leaving aside affirmative defenses for a moment, did he have to know that his advances were unwelcome?
No, Your Honor.
Well, if the answer to that is no, how is the mistake of fact defense available?
Well, Your Honor, under RCM 916J, it states that there's an affirmative defense of mistake of fact. And if the circumstances were as Specialist Goodman thought they were at the time, then he's not guilty of the offense charged. So if
if there's no element that he had to know his advances were unwelcome, how is it crime that he believed that they were welcome?
Well, there is, if you look at the joint appendix at where the military judge read the instruction on what sexual harassment included, it includes offensive comments. That was one of the terms offensive. And in fact, the regulation calls the comments, they have to be unwelcome. So either way, offensive or unwelcome, they need to be that. And I'm not here to argue that Specialist Goodman knew or thought he knew what PFCL was thinking. I'm arguing that what he thought at the time was that she was mutually consenting to this banter, and he did not think or know or have any reason to know they were offensive to her at the time he was making the comments. Now, whether he agrees later that they were because someone told him is, I believe, a different question that goes to the substantive crime versus the affirmative defense.
Did he have to know or intend that his comments offend?
I don't think that's one of the elements, Your Honor. It doesn't seem like that would be one of the elements of this crime. So I would say no.
Counsel, under the regulation, does the word unwelcomed mean the subjective view of either party of the conversation, or is it an objective view? That is, if the person receiving the comment, this victim in this case, were to unreasonably view the comments as unwelcome, the person could not be convicted, could they?
Your Honor,
Or is that any person in the Army can't come in and say, so-and-so said X to me, I didn't welcome it, I want you to bring a charge. It has to be objectively reasonable that it's unwelcome. Is that correct?
I would agree with that, yes, Your Honor.
So in this case, does the question of mistake of fact deal with the subjective view of either party, that is, whether the comments were unwelcome, or is it an objective view, that is, objectively, could a person view the comments as unwelcome or make a mistake of fact as to whether they are unwelcome? And the follow-on to that is, if the accused in this case came to the conclusion in the course of the plea inquiry that his comments were objectively unwelcomed, irrespective of whatever may have been in his mind at that time, why isn't that sufficient to sustain the plea?
Yes, Your Honor. I go back to, for the affirmative defense, it needs to be a subjective and objective belief that Specialist Goodman thought that she was involved in this. So PSCL's state of mind is not relevant to the affirmative defense. The substantive crime is a different story, and I'm not questioning whether there was a substantive crime here. I believe that he raised the affirmative defense of mistake of fact, and he did so because he raised both. The facts show he had an honest and reasonable belief that she was consenting to this mutual.
But the reasonable belief, doesn't that go to the objective test? That is, that if he has to reasonably believe at that point.
Yes, Your Honor, reasonable under the circumstances that he was in. So, for example, when PSCL is responding in kind, it doesn't ever say this is offensive to me, it is reasonable for him to continue in the course of action. If an objective person looking at the conversations that he describes in his inquiry would believe that this was a mutual conversation between two willing participants where neither is offended from a reasonable person watching what was going on.
Why don't his later comments in response to the military judge reflect an understanding on his part that that was not reasonable?
The comments to the military judge later reflect his understanding that she could. He accepted the fact that at the time I didn't know that she was offended, but if someone tells me she was offended at that time, he's reflecting that I believe that. And if you look at the tone of his answers to those type of questions, he's answering leading questions to most of those answers, to questions where he's talking about what the first sergeant told him. Didn't the first sergeant tell you that they were offensive? And he says yes. And wasn't PSCL only trying to be friendly? He says yes. However, when he's talking about the conversations in open forum, when the military judge asks open-ended question, he describes in detail what goes on. He discusses the fact that they discussed talking about their wedding rings.
What about the colloquy when the judge asked him, okay, Specialist Goodman, tell me at some point did what appeared to be mutual banter between you and this private change? Yes, sir, later on. So why doesn't that not resolve the inconsistency?
It doesn't resolve the inconsistency because, first, Your Honor, after that, he still elicits more facts of a mutual banter, of facts that he didn't think she was offended at the time he was making the comments later on in the inquiry. Second, he refers to an incident where, after which, he got the impression that she didn't want to talk to him anymore, and he stopped, and that's in his plea inquiry.
What about the stipulation of fact, the first paragraph on page 3, the comments there, and we can consider those, right?
In addition
to what's in the plea colloquy, and you don't think that it would be reasonable for him to believe that those comments were objectively unwelcome?
No, Your Honor, it clearly does not say that the stip is actually significant in that it does not anywhere in there say that she was ever offended by these comments, that these comments were unwelcome. It just says they're sexually charged comments, and in and of itself is not enough for a violation of the sexual harassment policy. Someone has to be offended.
But you're not challenging the sufficiency of the charge in this case.
No, Your Honor. It just goes to his reasonable belief that she was involved in this mutual banter, raising the affirmative defense of mistake of fact.
Is it really a mistake of fact defense, or is it a matter of inconsistent? Did he mistake one of the elements of the offense? Did he misconstrue or misunderstand that there was an order out there and that he violated it?
Well, first,
you get the unwelcome through the text of the order, do you not, and not from the elements of the offense?
No, Your Honor, the military judge read to him what sexual harassment was, and it was offensive, which, again, you will not find anywhere in the inquiry where he says she was offended. She told him it was offensive to him. So,
but does unwelcome come? Are you arguing that he didn't violate the order because the comments were welcome, or at least he thought they were? Or are you saying he had a mistaken belief as to something regarding the element of the offense?
Yes, Your Honor, he had mistaken belief that.
Your Honor, which element of the offense did he have a mistaken belief about?
No element. It's because it's an affirmative defense. He had. If the matters were as he thought, which she was not being offended, then he has a defense to the underlying crime of violating the order, violating AR 600-20.
In your view, did any of the events that occurred for which he was charged occur after the car incident?
No, Your Honor, and I'll point the court to the record at 183, I believe, where the military judge on the record modifies the charge 4 to change the date to the 6th of February. So the charge sheet is actually inaccurate in the record. So, and there was nothing after that. Yes, Your Honor, there was no incidents after that.
So what he believed or did not believe after the 6th of February, in your view, is irrelevant?
Correct.
To whether he had with respect to the charge?
Yes, Your Honor, because after that he testified, or he states that he stopped talking to PFCL, and then further on there was a no-contact order which he did not violate. So there was no, and that's another reason to believe that he had this belief, is that once he knew these comments were offensive, he stopped interacting with PFCL. Your Honor, you bring up a good point in that it's not clear exactly on the record what happened. That's a problem. Specialist Goodman brought up these facts that to the military judge triggered more questions, and he failed to go far enough in this case to resolve the issue.
What should he have done that he did not do?
In this case, Your Honor, he needed to explain what an affirmative defense was, what the affirmative defense of mistake of fact was, and make sure Specialist Goodman understood in his own head, made the decision that it didn't apply in this case. And then usually the military judge will talk and ask, did you go over this with your
case? Do you have any case law for the proposition that he had to essentially instruct on the elements of mistake of fact?
No, Your Honor. He had an obligation to resolve the apparent conflict.
Right. But I'm asking you, what specifically should he have done? And you're saying he should have gone through each element of mistake of fact and...
Yes, Your Honor. In this case, because the facts raised and the fact that he tried to resolve the issue by asking more questions, he did the right thing. He tried to ask more questions to resolve the plea, and the only way to resolve it for sure on the basis of this record is to go through the specific mistake of fact, make sure Specialist Goodman understood what it was so that there would be no substantial basis to question this plea later.
I mean, the mistake of fact has to go to either an element of the offense or to a mens rea, correct?
Yes,
I mean, it's not just a mens rea, it's not just a mistake in the abstract. It has to be to a specific thing upon which his finding of guilty or his plea to guilty is necessary.
Yes, sir.
And in this case, as I understand the charge of Article 92, the elements are pretty simple, that there was an order and that he violated it.
Yes.
And so I think, and this may be getting back to Chief Judge Baker's earlier question, is your argument is that he didn't violate it because, in fact, his actions were welcome? I mean, isn't that really the argument that you should be making, rather that there's a mistake of fact?
Your Honor, first I'd like to point out that the granted issue was that the military judge erred by not bringing up the mistake of fact defense. And as to anything that crosses over to that, yes, we would agree that he did not, there was a deficiency in this plea because he was not aware that the comments he was making were offensive to PFCL.
Counsel, if there is a Article 92 offense, do the members get instructed simply that they have to follow, they have to find that the order was violated, or do they get instructed on the content of the order? What's the nature of Article 92 with respect to elements and instructions?
Yes, Your Honor, and I see that I'm out of time, and I would love to answer your question on rebuttal, if that's
you may point. Not. No, go ahead.
You could answer that on rebuttal. That would be fine.
No, go ahead and answer it if you'd like.
Yeah.
You may answer it.
I'd prefer to answer on rebuttal.
Oh, very good. Counsel of the government?
Chief Judge Baker, members of the court, and may it please the court, I'm Captain Bradley Endicott, who along with Major Ellen Jennings represent the government in this case. The law clearly establishes that military judges are afforded broad discretion and significant deference when reviewing their decision to accept the plea of guilty. In situations where an accused raises a potential defense, but later admits facts which negates that potential defense, then the military judge may accept the plea without securing a disclaimer. In this case, notwithstanding appellant's initial testimony, which attempted to rationalize his behavior, the Providence inquiry viewed in its entirety shows that the appellant adequately and substantially negated his potential mistake of fact defense. In past cases, this court has indeed suggested that military judges should secure disclaimers when potential defenses are raised. However, neither past case precedents nor the rules for court-martial have ever required the judge to secure a disclaimer, especially in situations where the further inquiry shows that the potential defense does not apply. The discussion to RCM 910E states that if any potential defense is raised, a military judge should explain such a defense to the accused and should not accept a plea unless the accused admits facts which negate the defense. Likewise, past cases such as United States versus Inna Bennett and United States versus Peterson recognizes the principle that disclaimers are not always required when further facts show otherwise. And that is precisely what happened in this case, Your Honors. As a general intent offense, the mistake of fact in this case would have to be both honest and reasonable under the circumstances. Factual negation of either element would mean that the mistake of fact would not apply in this case, and thus the military judge was free or did not abuse his discretion by accepting the plea after further inquiry. After further inquiry by the military judge, appellant fundamentally negated with his own words both the objective and reasonable prongs to the mistake of fact defense.
Where does he do that?
Well, Your Honor, first speaking to the subjective prong, there are several places in the record which show that the appellant did not honestly believe PSCL engaged in mutual banter. First, at Joint Appendix at page 20, the appellant himself states to the military judge, "Sir, I guess I intimidated her, and I'm pretty sure I made her feel uncomfortable." At the Joint Appendix at page 21, the appellant told the military judge, "I believe that her comments were a defense mechanism." And he further admitted or explained to the military judge that PFCL's replies were not mutual banter, but were in fact a defense mechanism to disguise or hide her discomfort because she did not know how to respond to his overt sexual comments. And later, in Joint Appendix at page 2728, finally, appellant also states that in hindsight, he uses the word defense mechanism again to describe PFCL's responses to his sexual comments.
But isn't that the issue here when he uses the word hindsight? What we're looking at here is his state of mind at the time of the alleged offenses. And where in there does he say or acknowledge that at the time of the offenses he knew that they were unwelcome?
Well, Your Honor, the appellant admits that the words that he used or the sexual harassment were indeed offensive
to
PFCL.
One of the elements of the regulation is they must be unwelcome. And his argument is that given the context of the discussions at that time, he didn't realize they were unwelcomed. And so what we're trying to find out here is whether or not the military judge placed it on the record sufficiently that at the time of the offense, he realized that they were unwelcome. And so that's what we're looking at.
Your Honor, what's more probative in the context of a guilty plea is what the appellant said under oath. The appellant is free to change his mind and disclaim what he might have rationalized or claimed that he previously believed at this time. And all of these facts together, where he refers to the defense mechanism and saying that in hindsight that it was a defense mechanism, shows that he did not have an honest, objective belief. The facts of this case would be similar to the facts in United States versus Peterson, whereas in that case, the accused in that case said during an unsworn statement that, "I believe at the time I was invited, but now I don't believe that." And in that case, this court held that further inquiry was not required, and what was more important, obviously, was what he said under oath at the time of his guilty plea. So what's more important is what's said during the guilty plea later, Your Honor.
So it's not important that he believed that it was welcome or unwelcome at the time of the offense. Is that your position?
That's not the position, Your Honor. The position is that the appellant subjectively negated any subjective belief that he might have claimed that he previously had, and his subsequent words saying that it was a defense mechanism and that it was not mutual banter and that it was indeed offensive negated that, especially considering it was under oath at the time.
Did he ever negate his initial statement that he engaged in this conversation because he thought that would be a good lead in line to interacting with this other person? That seemed to be his fundamental approach here. Later on, there's discussion of the mutual banter and the interaction, but he initiated these conversations believing that would be that would lead him to a positive outcome here. Did he ever disavow that?
Well, Your Honor, that speaks more to the reasonableness prongs and whether it was reasonable for the appellant to even think that he could cross this line, if you will. And the further inquiry in this case shows that the appellant also negated that prong from the mistake of fact defense. At the joint appendix at page 26, after concerning with counsel, the appellant finally admitted to the military judge that, "Sir, she was just trying to be friendly and I turned it sexual in nature." And then he also further admits that he initiated the sexual comments. Under these circumstances, it would not be reasonable to cross this line, if you will, and engage in talk about shaving of the genitalia and engage in an intercourse or any kind of infidelity. When looking at the reasonable standard, considering appellant's age, experience, education, no reasonable soldier would interpret PFCL's mere friendliness as an invitation to engage in this particular type of sexual harassment. This is not a case where we're talking about an offensive joke or something along those lines. These were explicit and egregious sexual comments in nature, and certainly would not be permitted or would be hard to imagine any circumstance where one would have a reasonable mistake to believe that such talk would be authorized in the workplace.
That was the context here in which there's admission that this is not a social setting?
In the appellant's eyes, I don't know what he thought was appropriate or not, but clearly under the Army regulation, this type of talk clearly violated the Army command policy on sexual harassment. These were conversations that took place exclusively within the command area or the command parking lot, as appellant said, under Providency. So the place where these offensive comments were made is certainly an important factor to consider, Your Honor. Furthermore, as far as the issue of reasonableness, the court would have to also consider that appellant himself was fully aware of Army Regulation 600-20 and its prohibition on sexual harassment or its prohibition on making offensive comments in the workplace. Appellant admitted that he had attended sexual harassment prevention training, and he was regularly told that sexual harassment was, as he put it, a no-go in the military. Under these circumstances, it was not reasonable for appellant to engage in this type of talk or to further violate Army policy. In sum, the military judge properly accepted the plea after conducting further inquiry. Despite what appellant told the military judge at the beginning of his inquiry, he factually disclaimed his potential defenses and stated in hindsight that he now believed, or that he stated under oath, that PFCL's responses were not mutual banter, but were in fact a defense mechanism. And under these circumstances, that certainly would not raise a substantial basis to question the plea. Maybe there's a question, and that's why we're here today, Your Honor, but the appellant has to show a substantial basis. So in view of the further providency, it cannot be said that the entire providency is at substantial odds with his plea, considering what the military judge went over with the accused, or went over with the appellant at the end of his plea. If there are no further questions, may I briefly conclude? The entire province inquiry clearly shows that no substantial conflict exists between appellant's plea and overall testimony. Any potential inconsistencies that arose at the beginning of the inquiry were put to rest after the military judge conducted further inquiry. Therefore, the military judge did not abuse his discretion, and the government requests that this court affirm the decision by the Army Court of Criminal Appeals.
Is there a rebuttal? You have at least one question, we know.
Your Honor, in response to your question, yes. For Article 92, the panel would be instructed on the two elements of the offense, but they would also be instructed on the definitions involved in the regulation at issue. So, for example, I go back to that in this case, the military judge instructed Specialist Goodman on what sexual harassment was, and in that definition included the word offensive, which is nowhere, he does not, based on the record, he does not think those, that he was making offensive comments at the time he was making them. Now, going to, I have three basic points in rebuttal. First, the government urges this court to use the whole record, and I agree. If you take the record at face value and what Specialist Goodman say, it is clear he is painting a picture of a mutual consensual banter with this PFCL where he is just trying to establish a sexual relationship with her. If you look at the stip of fact, which I've already identified, does not state anywhere in there that these comments were offensive or unwelcome. If you look at the specification to charge 4, he pleads not guilty to unlawful sexual contact with the same PFCL, and in fact, if you look further in the record, his defense is consent and mistake of fact as to consent. And if you look further in the record, you'll see that there was two other witnesses who testified to PFCL's flirtatiousness, which supports Specialist Goodman's belief that she was a flirtation person, and it's reasonable for him to think that she would be a willing participant in sexually charged banter. And second, Specialist Goodman, all he did during the inquiry was rationalize PFCL's behavior. All his comments were what he had no idea what PFCL was thinking. He described what was told to him, and he understood what was told to him. But, as I said before, a reasonable person watching this exchange would not think that either party was offended by what was going on. They would see two mutual participants talking or hanging out in the parking lot discussing sexually charged topics.
Do you really think that it's reasonable for him to say, or for a person to believe that because a woman was flirtatious or promiscuous with person A or B, therefore they will be so with me, person C? I mean, isn't that exactly what some of the military rules of evidence prevent? That sort of mindset?
In a vacuum, yes, Your Honor, but that combined with other facts. He does describe chit-chatting with her. He does describe different encounters.
Does he describe any instance where she initiated the chit-chat, or were they all instances where he initiated the chit-chat?
He does describe instances where she initiates chit-chat. She does give him a hug, and it gives hugs to other people in the area. He does not, he states that she does not ever initiate the sexually charged banter, but she does initiate chit-chat and is willing to...
But the chit-chat is relevant for purposes of why we're here today, counsel.
Yes, sir.
Does she ever initiate that
yes.
sort of
well, not
sexually
the,
charged
no.
banter?
No.
He always initiates it.
He always... But at the record, at Joint Appendix 17, you'll see that it was equal amounts of time and back and forth. Or Joint Appendix 15, she says that.
Counsel, just to tie this down, in this case, my understanding is that the defense is focusing on these specific aspects of privacy, and the defense is not challenging the application of this regulation to this situation in the sense that it's being applied in a manner that would violate the private personal social rights of soldiers.
If this court would like to, I would
That's not my question. No, my question is, where are you right now?
That is not what I'm here to argue.
Thank you.
Third, I'd like to distinguish the case law that the government counsel brought up. First, in Peterson, the issue there, Peterson gave one sentence in his unsworn talking about some sort of defense. Well, here you have pages of record. At 15, you know, he talks about the mutual banter. At 16, she says, if I didn't wear this ring, it'd be on. Oops, I dropped my ring. And he interpreted that as having sex with her. At 25, she was very touchy-feely, you know, giving hugs and stuff. And he got the vibe she was interested. So it's clear that this is definitely not Peterson. And as far as in the Bennett, that case is similar to this in that the military judge properly went further in his inquiry and properly resolved it in that case because it was just the doctor was kind of wishy-washy to start with about the accused mental state. But it was adequately resolved, which is different from this case.
I have one last question. Appellant was an NCO, a non-commissioned officer?
No, you're not a specialist.
At the time. And what rank is that?
E4. It's not an NCO.
Not in the Army?
Thank you. The court thanks counsel for their arguments. The case is submitted, and the court stands in recess until further order of the court.
The court stands in recess until further order of the court.